I just taught my grandson that. Took him on his first squirrel hunt last year. And he's like, how do you see a squirrel? I'm like, are you looking for a squirrel out on a limb?
Yeah.
No. Like, no. Stop and just stare. Stare through the trees. And now don't look. Just look into the trees. And then you'll see something move between in the daylight over here.
Right.
And he's like, oh. And I was like, and so I saw this squirrel. I said, hey, stare at that big oak over there. Chestnut oak. I said, look at that chestnut oak. Just stare at it. He goes, yeah, I got him. Like immediately when that squirrel moved, he said he saw it. He goes, oh, yeah. I said, same thing with deer.
Yep.
Look for an ear flick, look for a tail, whatever. But squirrel hunting is what taught me that skill. I know that as growing up because my uncles told me, don't look for a squirrel.
Just stare
out through the hole in the trees and look for something to move. Bow hunting is hard. Bow hunting is so freaking hard that any success that you can have and any opportunity you get, man, it's just hard not to take them.
Yep.
Because you know as well as I know that there's a chance they all blew out right then and you didn't have another chance, especially if it's later in the hunt, man. It's not so much standards go down in a hunt like people talk about. It's opportunities decrease daily.
Sure.
And then when one shows up, you kind of just got to take what the mountain throws at you, man. I do. And I've always just embraced that.
Yeah.
I've always been happy with that. I learned to be happy with that. And I'm going to always be happy with that.
I'll never shoot a deer that I'm sorry I did if I walked up on it.
And
I don't ever want that feeling ever and ever. So, and I wasn't like that when I was young.
Yeah.
No.
Because like everything made you happy, right?
That's right. Everything made you happy. I used to think it was age.
Yeah.
You know, I've shot this many deer. You know, I've graduated from, I got to just get one. Now I'll accept myself because I was able to accomplish that. Now I want to get a bunch of them. I want to have 4 tags in 4 states and I want to fill all those.
Right.
And then now I've done that. So now I want the biggest one.
Yeah.
And then once I get the biggest one, I might want another biggest one.
Right.
But then you get to a point where you're just like, I don't care if I shoot them at all, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's personalities that'll never be that.
Yeah.
Because I know older guys than me that'll never be that.
Yeah.
They're going to fill tags till the day they die, and I think that's okay. I just personally don't want to walk up on something ever and wish I hadn't shot it.
Hey guys, welcome to 2024. Thank you for all the years of support. Been at this a long time and appreciate you sticking with me. And if you're a new listener, thank you for tuning in. If you could help me out by going to iTunes or Spotify and leaving us a review, really appreciate it. Helps me keep this free. Speaking of keeping this free, check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. Use promo code John Stallone to save 20% on everything that they have. And lastly, if you could, do yourself a favor. Help protect hunting. Help protect your heritage and get involved with Howl for Wildlife. That's Howl, H-O-W-L, for wildlife.org. Go check it out. Get involved. Without further ado, let's jump into this episode. Right, we're coming live, or semi-live, I guess, from the Hunt Expo. I got Muley Slayer, Mark Smith, and Jeremy Duggar with me. What's going on, guys?
Having a great time at the show.
Yeah, man. I was enjoying the show, man.
The dynamic duo.
Hey, man. Yeah.
The Cape Crusaders.
Hey, man. You know it.
We've had some moments.
That's Batman. I'm his Robin.
Nice. So, yeah, I just I was going to ask you guys to share some, since you guys have hunted, like, what, 25 years, you said?
Yeah, yeah, a little background. So, yeah, this is Mark Smith, Muley Slayer on Instagram, Muley Slayer 1. Jeremy Duggar's Muley Mojo. And Jeremy, I moved into the Four Corners area back in 94, 95, Four Corners area of New Mexico. My job took me there, and Jeremy was working for the local archery shop back then. And I had gone in there and was getting some intel on where to hunt and just, you know, meeting the shop. And this was a cool guy my age, right? Sometimes you go into a new town, the archery shop, some old geezer that don't want to talk to nobody. Mm-hmm. But here was this hip guy, right? Like this good looking dude. He was just like, man, he's just a cool guy. He put off this wonderful energy. And what I never told you is I went out and I didn't lose all those arrows. I just wanted to come keep buying arrows so I could talk to you. No, but I was losing arrows, man. As a fresh mule deer hunter, man, I thought this is going to be easy because I kept seeing them out in these alfalfa fields and around town where I was hunting there in Aztec. And, man, I just went out and emptied my quiver every Saturday of season. And I'd go back in and see Jeremy or Larry, his brother, worked there too. And they just kept selling me 24-13s and Thunderheads, man. And I'd go back out. And finally, man, at the end of the season, I whacked one and I killed a forked horn. And being a Texan,
yep,
I had put me a tree stand up in a tree, put some boards up in a tree with some screws, man.
There you go.
And a cedar tree in this little travel corridor where deer would travel from private land they'd come out of alfalfa fields and bed up on the BLM land. And I started seeing them come through there, you know, like on my travels. I'm like, I'm just going to put a tree stand and hunt them right there in this pinch point.
Right.
And $5 came through. Then I killed the last one, which was a tall forked horn. And I took it in there. And Jeremy, you could, you know, like, I always embellish this story like he was shocked. I don't, maybe he wasn't shocked, but he's like, damn.
I was pretty shocked.
He got one. Like, he sent me to the most generic, like, every new guy that moves there. They tell them, go down this road, you'll kill a deer. That's like telling, that's the most generic. Well, and no one ever did.
Right.
So he tells me, go down this road. And I got one. And I was so proud of it. And he's like, you got one, man. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And then I just kept coming in. And I think there was a mutual, like, he liked me and I liked him. We liked talking to each other. Just, you know, we had kind of, you know, spiritually, we come from the same type of background. You know, we're both believers. And he sensed that in me right away. I sensed it in him. We just kept talking. And one day, man, I came in and I started doing some research. And I went and I said, hey, man, I'd listen to him talk, and then I tried to pinpoint where he's hunting, right? Mm-hmm. So I liked him, but I want to go poach his hunting spot. I want to go get his spot, right? So I'm listening to him talk, and I went to this old man that knew the country, was an old retired well hand there. He goes, well, that sounds like so-and-so Mesa. They're the only gate I know of. So I went and told Jeremy, and he's like, yeah, dude, you're going to be all over me. That's my spot. So rather than have you fumbling through my spot, let me take you under my wing and show you the ropes.
Right.
Brotherhood started right then and there, man.
Nice.
We took off, and that was in 1997, and then I was invited into the camp in 98, and there's only been a couple years. We've not hunted mule together since 98.
Wow.
And then he moved over to Expert Archery. It was East Main Trade Center. He bought the archery part from them. I shot for him. He signed me on as a co-op shooter for Hoyt. So my relationship with Hoyt started through Jeremy.
Oh, nice.
I was a shop shooter, right, before I got on the factory pro staff. And he just believed in me. He's just like, you carry yourself well. You don't cuss in front of the ladies. You win tournaments. You kill deer. You're just the kind of guy we want representing our shop. And
nice.
Just... from there. And then another thing, I was telling Cam Haynes this the other day, because he's like, how did you get started in Eastman's? I was trying to get my name out there back. This is the 90s. I'm trying to get my name out. Like, I'm
right.
Like all of us tried, right? We're trying to get started. And he goes, I get in and we're going fly fishing of all things. He goes, hey, I'll show you something. He throws me an Eastman's bow hunting journal, like the first issue. And I go, what's this? He goes, dude, you can write your stories. Do you remember that?
I do.
You go, man, you can write your stories, and you send it to them, and they'll publish it.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, well, I'm not a writer. He goes, no, man, they'll edit it and stuff. And like, they'll send you a hat and stuff, man. Like,
nice.
It'll say pro staff on it. Back then, that mattered. That meant something, right? So, man, the first story I ever wrote was the first story Cam Haynes ever edited, because he had just got that job in 2000.
Oh,
so
nice.
I hunted 99 in 2000, and I finally wrote my first story. I killed 3 Pope and Young animals in 2000. And so I wrote a Pope and Young medley was
nice.
and Cam. So yeah, I didn't know if you remembered that or not,
man.
But you threw it to me because you knew I was what I was trying to do, right?
Yeah.
And rather than, this is the kind of guy. So rather than be a hater,
he
saw the light, man. He lifted me up. Like, here, man, here's a platform for you to go do this with Hoyt. Here's a platform to go do this. And it gives me chill bumps right now thinking about it. He's just that guy, man.
That's very rare in this industry.
And so I try to give that back to him, man. You know, like, I just try to. You want a friend? Be a friend. And I try to be the very best. I try to be his brother. You know, he's got plenty of brothers, but I love him that much. You know, like, I just want to do better for him because he does good for me, man.
That's
you know,
awesome.
He always
hey,
has.
Hey, I was like, if I can send this guy down any road, anywhere, and he can find a deer and kill it, I want to hunt with him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I can send him to the worst place.
Yeah.
Like, you know, keeping him out of my hair.
Right.
And he comes back with a dead mule deer.
Nice.
And it's like, I think Muley Slayer was born. I mean, you know what I mean? It's
yeah,
like,
right there.
Dang.
Yeah.
And then the story about the hunting spot, you know, coming in and saying, hey, I'm gonna hunt right here, which is where we were, like kind of our prime spot, January bow
for
New
deer
Mexico. It's like, well, I guess you're gonna come to our camp because we're all gonna be there anyway,
right.
Yeah, and so that's how
it's
it
like I injected myself, but like, man, there was a higher power pointing everything that way, because the thing is, no one, they have a big family camp, they're a tight-knit, you know, family,
right?
And they have a big wall tent, and their dad is the patriarch of the whole thing, and he's very particular, wonderful man, very particular about who's in, and I was like the first guy that wasn't blood in this thing, man. And I never took that for granted. I never looked past that fact that this is a big deal. Killing deer is one thing, right?
Yeah.
But just having, I'm so far from home, I have no one. This family brought me in, and now we are family. Like, absolutely.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's funny, your story about killing a mule deer, your first mule deer, it's literally the same story I have.
You use whitetail tactics, get one on the
ground? Yeah, well, I was having a hard time, and I just kept seeing it was this burn area, and I saw these trails, and there was like 3 trails, and actually I was kind of a jerk. I cut a big, and I dragged this like log across one of the other trails to force them to go down the other one. And, you know, it was like an inside corner and there was a tree there. And I was like, all right, cool. And that's why I killed my first forky horn mule deer.
Yeah, buddy.
That's cool.
In velvet. Yep.
Yeah.
That's how you, that's what we do, man. That's how you get it done.
Yep.
Yeah. The thing about Mark for me is that, most people won't know this about Mark because most people don't hunt with Mark.
Right.
But the thing the reason I love hunting about Mark is number one, the energy.
Yeah.
But
very energetic.
He has this thing about him where it's almost like the animals come. Like, I'm not really sure how to explain it, but the guy can take a nap, wake up, shoot a buck. He can go use the bathroom, shoot a buck while he's doing that, right? It's just like there's kind of an aura about him. And as a hunter,
muley magnet.
I guess, you know, that would be the cliche word for it is muley magnet, but there's I don't know what it is, but they show up. They show up when Mark's around. And so the dynamic is I scout a lot. I do a lot of the legwork, a lot of the scouting because he comes into our neck of the woods and hunts.
Right.
And so I'm really good at finding the bigger deer, you know, the best options. But if I put him in those best places and best options, stuff's going down.
Right.
Because he's got that magnetic thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know if you feel the same way about yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
But I like to hunt with guys that see really good, have good game eyes, because you're not going to miss very much. And people that have that kind of magnetic aura about him. And this guy has it.
You said the first time I ever heard you say that was in a podcast we did last time, and you said I like to hunt with Mark because Mark sees deer. Mm. And I started thinking about it. Yeah, I do, man. Like I never even thought about that, right? But when we hunt together, it's just it's a whole different. I'm sure you have that guy you hunt with. That's your buddy, right? But when we go to, it's not. We don't wonder if we're going to get something. We just I hope we find a really, really, really big one. He does. I just hope I find a really, really good one, and he hopes he finds a really, really big one. But that whole thing about attracting deer was when we found our spot. We're hunting in Colorado now. Back in 2016, we just stumbled onto this migration route. We started hunting it back then. It's kind of our favorite now. But I killed a buck on Wednesday. I was late. It's 2:00 in the afternoon. We're going to sit here all day and watch deer funnel down this drainage. And, you know, your eyes are burnt. Your face is on fire. You know that when you rub your face and it just feels so good, your face is on fire, man. Been sitting there in the sun all day.
Let me stop you for just a second. Yeah. Don't lose your train of thought. We walked out to that point and looked down and we could see the migration trails.
Oh, yeah.
Like you could see them with your naked eye.
Yeah, it was
And I live in the area, so I know where the deer start and where they end. I know where they go, right? And I'd been spending, I don't know, 10 years trying to refine that spot.
Right.
And so we were looking at the maps that night before, and we're like, hey, I think we need to check this out. So we walk out on that point. We look down, and there's just these two or three beat-down migration trails.
Looks like cow trails and no cows.
Right. And so that's why we were going to go, hey, we need to sit here all day long.
Yeah. And so he goes, I think we need to sit here. And if he says that, we're going to sit there.
Yeah.
Hell or high water, we're sitting here. And it wasn't very long when the first doe and fawn come by. And then two or three does. And then we're like, it's 11 o'clock in the morning. Deer are filtering through. This is the migration route. And so we're sitting there, and it was pretty warm that day. Sun's baking on us. And this is on the Wednesday. And two deer Wednesday, any of the hunt. And anyway, my eyes were fried. Mm. Just staring at this freaking place all day long. Right? So like, dude, we're going to go in shifts. I'm going to take it. I'm literally sitting on the ground next to him. And I just laid down, and I think I just did that thing where you kind of jerk and went to sleep, you know?
Yeah.
And he taps my leg. Dude, deer. And I get up, and I'm on a scope, and he's through glass looking. And two does and a 27-inch buck come out this bench below us. Man, guns, the Weatherbys went to blazing, man.
Yeah.
Boom, boom. I shot a couple times. We both shoot 257 Weatherbys, and it was 475. And he was going up on the bench. Man, I hit him, and I hit him back and low a little bit, and I had to go down there and get him. But I got that buck. He had to wake me up, and I shot. I literally had to wake up, look, clear my eyes, and I shot the buck. And it has happened to be the farthest one I've ever shot, right? I'm a bow hunter.
Yeah.
I tell everybody, I end every sentence, but I'm a bow hunter. So whether it be this, whether it be that, 257, da-da-da, but I'm really a bow hunter.
Yeah.
And my son, Travis, he's like, you'd fool a lot of people. Much as you shoot that Weatherby, you'll fool some people.
Yeah.
But I'm a bow guy. I love it. Anyway, so the next day when he said the deer magnet, there's another little spot you can't see from where we sit, but deer can get through this, call it the gap.
Yeah.
That's where we go take a piss.
Okay.
So we don't call it taking a piss no more. I'm going to go check the gap.
Yeah.
So on day morning two, man, the morning coffee hit. It's like 7:45 or something. Because I'd already predicted. You're going to shoot your deer at 7:44 this morning. I can just feel it. Crispy, cold morning.
Yeah.
And it was like 7:40, dude. Like, it was close. I get up. I'm like, hey, I'm going to go check the gap. So I'm over there taking a piss, looking. I see this doe come through the oak brush below me, and this big chocolate rack buck head bobbing, coming through, chasing her. So I was like, I mean, I'm over here like, you know what, in hand, peeing. I'm like, hey, bro, I think you might want to look at this buck, man. So he scrambles over there shooting sticks. He takes one look, goes, yeah, I'm smoking that buck right now. Boom, shot him. that's what you're talking about, right? Like, that's it just comes out of nowhere, man.
It comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's, and not everybody's like that. Not everybody has a game eye.
Yeah.
Did you guide?
I do. I still guide.
Yep. You still guide, yeah. Yep. And so maybe some of your clients are that way, or maybe they just rely on you totally. But I've hunted with, you know, a decent amount of people that don't have a game eye.
Yeah.
And then I've hunted with people that have that game eye, and they just, you see twice the amount of animals in any given day than you would otherwise, right? And he's that guy. Not only that, but he's got that kind of magnetism.
When I'm glassing, I'm usually that guy.
Yeah.
But lately, as I'm getting older, like, for just looking without glass,
not as good,
then
huh?
I'm not as good late, anymore.
Do you wear glasses yet?
I only wear them when I'm working on the computer.
Man, I got a little bit of correction in my right. But that nest that we're talking about, I'm losing it, especially low light hunting in East Texas where I hunt bow hunt, man. I used to sit in my tree till I couldn't see the ground below me.
Same.
Now, with 30 minutes of shooting light left, man, I can't see my pins through my peep good.
Okay.
And so rather than have a big buck slink in and bump him, I get out. I'm like, I used to be the last guy in camp.
Yeah.
It just comes with age, man. Now I'm kind of the first guy. I'm starting the fire, getting the grease hot for the catfish. Because I can't see the ground no more, right? And if I can't see the ground, I'm not going to shoot at a buck.
Right.
And, man, low light is it's bad.
I still sit even when I can't see because I like to get in and out in the dark. But I hear you.
Yeah. A lot of times them big bucks will slink in. I get pictures of them. This one stand I hunt, Bigfoot hole. Several times my target buck has come through smelling the ground in front of my camera I have there
right.
5 minutes after I left. And so I'm like, I never want to come down out of the tree and bump into him. So now I'll just get, if he doesn't come by.
Right. If you could see, if that makes sense.
By the last 15 minutes that I can shoot, if he's not here by then, I'm just going to get down. But anyway, that's kind of down a rabbit hole, but that's part of getting older. Are we the same age?
I'm 48.
I'm a little older. I'm 53. But 48, I didn't have this. I didn't wear glasses, and I could see. Man, I
had perfect vision until I turned 40.
Yeah.
And everything went like a light switch.
45 for me, just up close now. I struggle.
Gotta 50
readers.
50 other weird stuff starts happening, and just I'm over it, man. It's weird. Yeah.
That game eye is. I'm like, I've been with guys that glass really good, but that game eye I'm talking about is when you're not glassing.
When you're not glassing.
Just picking out animals out of the terrain.
Right.
You know, with that, I think God-given ability. I really do. I think that you can probably learn it. Maybe it is somewhat of a learned trait, but I think that there's guys that have it that's God-given.
I think it is definitely something that you can learn because I know we call it getting our deer eyes. Like when you're first out the first time for the season, whatever.
Yeah.
Then by the end of the week, you're like, spotting stuff. Actually, Charles is really good at, he's got the game eye that you're speaking of. There's a kid that works for me, Shane, that guy. First off, he's an amazing glasser, and we'd be driving and shit and be like, yo, there's a deer over there. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? Give me the glass. Oh, okay, yeah, there is.
That's what I'm talking about right there. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. You know, I learned that, I know that I'm good at it. Like, you know, I'm always the one finding the game, but you know, I learned that skill as a kid when I was squirrel hunting back in East Texas. Because you know, I just taught my grandson that. Took him on his first squirrel hunt last year, and he's like, "How do you see a squirrel?" I'm like, "Are you looking for a squirrel out on a limb?"
Yeah.
No. I'm like, no. Stop and just stare. Stare through the trees, and now don't look. Just look into the trees, and then you'll see something move between in the daylight over here.
Right.
And he's like, "Oh," and I was like, and "So I saw this squirrel." I said, "Hey, stare at that big oak over there. There's a big." Chestnut oak. I said, look at that chestnut oak. Just stare at it. He goes, I got him. Like immediately when that squirrel moved, he said he saw it. He goes, oh, yeah. I said, same thing with deer.
Yep.
Look for an ear flick, look for a tail, whatever. But squirrel hunting is what taught me that skill. I know that as growing up, but because my uncles told me, don't look for a squirrel.
Just
stare out through the hole in the trees and look for something to move, you know, and then you start seeing it, right?
So, right.
Yeah.
No, that's a good way. I never thought about it with squirrel hunting, but. That's exactly how I teach people to glass or look for deer. You know, you you're looking to, you're looking for a deer, you're not going to see a deer.
No.
You got to look for parts and look for things that are horizontal lines and things that don't.
Well, colors, lines.
Yeah.
Stuff that just, I think when you glance over it, if you have a good game eye, you can glance fast and you can pick that out almost peripherally.
Right.
Like snap your fingers like right there.
Yeah, yep.
And that's what I'm talking about. That's the best definition ever, right?
Yeah.
I'm not bad at it, but this, I like to hunt with people that are good at it.
Yeah.
Right.
And we have no, there's some areas that we, you know, road hunting gets a bad name, but there's some areas that, especially like Arizona, the places we hunt, and some of the New Mexico stuff, you're covering a lot of ground.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily riding around with a rifle hanging out the window looking to shoot a deer, but we're looking for deer.
Yeah.
And we're traveling from one place to the other. And we're, you get some buddies that, I don't really want to say nothing. I thought I saw a deer butt. I'm going to ask you to back up. And so you do that two or three times.
Yeah.
Me and him might do that 1,000 times a day, and no one says a word. There's no shaming in it. Like, because he knows I'm not trying to be cool.
Right.
We've had buddies that want to see something so bad that they fabricate stuff, and they'll be like, hey, back up. And it's clearly not something, right?
Yeah.
But I could tell him probably 2,000 times in the day,
Hey,
back up. He's not going to question it.
Right.
Because that 2,001th time, it's going to be a freaking Boone Crockett buck standing over there, and he knows that.
Yeah.
And I know that about him, too. And like, we don't even... Like, it's not even a joke. If he puts it in reverse and backs up to look at something, 90% of the time there's a deer standing there. And we don't shame on the backing up and looking up.
No.
Then you got guys that hang out the window screaming, big buck, huge buck, big buck. He's like, shh, man, back the buck right by the road, man. There's guys like that too, right? But me and him, we might hunt for an hour. Like when we hunt some of those places like that, we may not even talk for an hour. But it might be like,
yeah.
And that's the only communication we have, man. And that's just what works. It's just tapping on the knee. Hey, and point. One of the biggest bucks he ever killed, we were going out that morning. We'd left a little bit after daylight. We're going out. Balboa, that was in 2000. Big old buck. It was a scrapper, blind in one eye, giant 3-point. He killed it. It was his target buck.
Nice.
This thing was out by a drinker, man, right by the road. And we're driving to go to our tree stands. We had some tree stands put up in another area. And all I did was tap him on the knee, and I pointed like that. He stopped, put it out, got his bow, stalked out there, whacked that buck, man. But we never said a word until he shot the deer, man.
Nice.
It was cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, Jeremy, since you're the guy that does the scouting and stuff, what's your approach? What are you looking for in areas before you get boots on the ground?
Yeah, so, I mean, all of the scouting I do is in the area that I've lived in all my life.
Right.
And so, terrain-driven. I'm a tracker. I track. And so everything is around that. I don't like to glass. And I've said this on other podcasts.
Okay.
Not a big fan of just picking a random area and putting up glass and trying to find a random deer. I don't like to do it that way. And so a lot of time in the woods, of course, tracks and trail cameras.
Yeah.
And so plaster. So in New Mexico, where we primarily hunt or looking for the bigger deer, you're not drawing that tag very often every 3 or 4 years. So in between those years, I'm always out scouting and stuff. I picked up coyote hunting lately.
Okay.
And I'm just over the moon addicted to that stuff.
Yeah.
And so what's cool about that is it takes you to new places, right? And maybe takes you to places.
I learned a lot of places because of coyote hunting. Yeah.
Yeah. You go out to what you would call coyote, quote unquote, coyote country, but you don't think of it as deer country until you go out in the coyote country and you see a giant buck standing out there in the coyote country, right?
Right.
And so that's pretty cool. But anyway, time in the woods, and then once we know what unit we're going to be in, I got a lot of trail cameras. So I plaster it with trail cameras, mostly on water sources.
Okay.
We're dry and arid, so if you can get those water sources in the summertime, you can pick up the bucks you want to hunt, and then tracks. And so I do a lot of tracking. That's almost my first love.
Mm-hmm.
And so after a fresh rain and stuff, I'll go out to new areas, look for big, solo tracks in the summertime. Sometimes those bucks will be together, so maybe one or two sets of tracks. Then once I locate where those bucks are living, that's when I glass.
Okay.
That's when I'll employ the Swarovski 15s and I'll get after it. But unless I have a target that I know is there, like, I just don't like glassing at all. I'm not a glassing guy.
Gotcha.
Once I put the glass on my eye, though, if I know there's a buck in that area, I can find them. And so I'll either find them with the glass after finding them with the tracks, or I'll find them with trail cameras.
Nice.
And that's how kind of I attack it. And so I'm over the hey, this looks like deer country and this don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of the bigger bucks we've chased are in areas that didn't look necessarily like it would hold a big deer.
Yeah.
And so now I look absolutely everywhere. So yeah, I don't discount. I guess a couple reasons I don't discount any area. Number one, I've been to most areas.
Right.
And I got exploration in me, right? I like to explore. Sure. And so it's easier now for me at my age. I've already been there, here, and there. I check those areas every year that will hold deer constantly or hold big bucks constantly. I'm always on those, but I really love just going out to new wild areas, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to find an area with a giant buck that's grown to age because nobody's been bothering him. Mm-hmm. And in this day and age, I mean, that's really difficult.
It's very hard. Everybody's everywhere.
Everybody's everywhere.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my daughter had a tag this year, and we had a giant buck we were chasing. We thought we were the only ones.
Mm-hmm.
An outfitter ended up killing it out from under us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so we, you know, pulling up on this godforsaken country, it's like,
yeah,
here's these outfitters. I'm like, oh, come on. Like, how do they know about
it
this?
It happens
buck?
All the time. Yeah. It happens all the time.
So did that answer your question?
I
track
think
trail
so.
Cameras,
yep.
Well,
you know what? I'm gonna clarify this one too. I'm gonna get a little bit more in depth in it.
Okay.
When you're going to a place that you haven't been,
yeah,
what's your attack? Like, how do you like pick the or narrow down where you're gonna go check?
I got an easy answer for you. I don't do that.
Okay.
That's a question for Mark.
Oh, Mark.
So this guy,
go,
this
Mark.
Guy,
you
so
do
this
that.
This guy likes to go state to state. You know, right? When I talk about me being exploratory, I'm talking about on my home turf.
Okay.
Like, I don't travel. I don't travel.
He's a homebody.
Like, right?
Duggar is homebody.
I'm after
man.
Waiting till I get a tag and finding a specific buck that's giant and killing him or not killing him. And that's the end of the story.
So you don't follow this guy to, you know, Colorado and Nevada and all this. Okay.
I don't.
Not at all, man.
He's been on many
He is my
hunts.
New Mexico destination, right. Period. Colorado.
Colorado.
But everything else, mainly, and it bums me out because he owns an archery shop and he hasn't killed a deer with a bow and arrow since 2008 or 9.
Seriously?
8, 9, yeah.
So the problem is I'm the guy, and I've developed that over 32 years, my customer base, and they don't trust anybody else.
Yeah.
And so because archery hunt starts in August or September, and we're busy through September,
sure,
I just can't be away from the shop. I just can't.
And so
he invites me, but it's like, I can't go September 2nd.
I compromise.
The peak selling season
and
for
I pick
me.
Up my Weatherby, and I go hunt with him. That's the only way he wants to hunt. But we're two different. We are so odd couple.
Yeah.
He is specifically homebody, the most giant buck in his core area, or he's not going to shoot one.
Gotcha.
I am experienced. I want to research, apply, draw, hunt, kill, process, pack out, come home, eat.
Yep.
I'm the whole process guy.
Right.
I'm not. So if I just did a podcast with Robbie at Rockslide about buck shaming,
I heard.
I will never do that. I will never. If anyone's going to shame me, it'll be me because I have criteria. And if I chumped out and shot one that I didn't go after, that's on me. But no one has a right to tell me what's right or wrong.
Right.
It's just I don't want to get into that again. But he is one dynamic. It's all or nothing giant, and knowing that. If the biggest buck I've ever even dreamed in my life walked out, we both have tags, I'm going to step back. Go ahead, man. Go ahead and do that.
Yep.
Because if that's really all he's after, and that's why he's got several over 200, and I don't. Not necessarily, but but I've been beside him when he killed his biggest bucks ever, and I can tell you I wouldn't want it the other way around. Mm-hmm. I watched him kill a 216-inch typical Boone.
Right.
4-point. Imagine that. I think it netted
203.
Yeah. But gross was what, like 213, 216 or something?
Gross was 216. It's in the Boone and Crockett record book at the very bottom because they wanted me, after it was officially measured, they wanted me to have it panel measured.
Okay.
And I was like, it's not a state record. It's not a world record. Like, it kind of aggravated me a little bit because I had it on a big pedestal and it was like, I can't pull this thing down and drive it to Reno, Nevada. And I was like, so I just don't want to do that. Like, well, if you don't do that, it's not going to take its actual place in the book, right?
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, just put it at the bottom then because I don't want to. Well, later, I kind of felt bad because I figured out why they wanted me to do that.
Mm.
It was the biggest typical in that recording period.
Oh, wow.
That was shot.
I was standing
so
beside him.
I kind of felt like a
chump.
I felt like a chump after that.
And it was a cool story. Like, knew about the buck for 2 years, was after it.
Yeah.
But when he pulled the trigger, he wasn't sure. And he's like, I don't know if it's him or not. And I'm looking at the deer, and I can see his eyeball in the oak brush, and his face, and his shoulder.
Yeah.
But, dude, like, this far from his eye up in the oak brush
was
a fork.
Dines?
I'm like, who gives a crap? And he looks at me, he goes, dude, I'm going to shoot this buck. I'm like, I know you are. And I got my ears plugged, man. Boom, he whacks him. And we didn't know. Like, when he shot, he goes, you think I got him? Come on, man. All the does are still standing there, and the buck's gone. Like, yeah dude, you got him. So we go up there. And it's just that thing, right? Like, you're in shock because he's like, it happened so fast, and he knew what was on the line. There's a booner on the line, and did I get him? And when we walk around that tree, man, that thing was laying there.
Yeah.
It was like, dude.
Crazy.
That's a moment, and time just stopped, right? Like, oh, my gosh, man. And then on the next one was a 220-something-inch buck he shot. I had a tag. He had a tag. And that one we shot with Tim Bailey with DRT Outfitters there in New Mexico. He was out helping us. He helped us get the tags, and he was doing a push for us, right?
Yeah.
He smokes his freaking 220-inch deer at 500 yards, flying, running, man, smoked him, dirt rolled him, and that turned into a rodeo. We didn't get him till the next morning, but he got him. And I killed a 195 the next day. I got a nice 4-point. I was happy with.
I remember seeing you.
In that moment, the way that went down, I would not go, I wish I'd have shot the big one and you shot that one. About just because he did all of the work.
Yeah.
And dude, he's like, where he killed that buck was like the dark side of the moon. Mm-hmm. No one was hunting that buck there except him. Yeah, and that's why he deserved it, because he's the one that went, tracked it down and found it out in the middle of like miles from nowhere in a scene.
I remember hearing you tell this. I don't know if you were telling me this story. I feel like maybe you told me the story, or I heard you on a podcast telling the story.
I told that whole story on Dustin's podcast too.
Maybe it was. I don't know. I listen to Dustin Whitworth's.
Yeah.
How do you say his
name? Whitworth.
Yeah, Whitworth. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've listened to his podcast over time. I've been on his podcast myself, but
on that big typical buck, I could just see the back fork.
Uh-huh.
And the problem was that two bucks scouted there, and one of them was one of those I call them forked in the back 3-points, right? They're forked in the back, and then they have these main beams that kind of curl in and come up.
Yeah, yeah.
And I kind of watched that genetic in my area. I feel like as I grew up watching mule deer, I watched that genetic start to take over.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've seen bucks like that,
but,
you know, horrible scoring bucks if you're after scoring deer. But this thing was really big. And so I told Mark, it's one of those two bucks.
Yeah, yeah. Either and way, he wasn't going to be disappointed.
And I, because I could only see the back fork. I was like, I'm going to be happy with whatever one it is because they're both big, right?
Right.
So I settled in, closed the shot off, and we walked up, and it was the right buck.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, it was one of those. But it was a time stop, standstill moment because we chased it actually 3 years, that buck.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, it's crazy how genetics, because you hear people talking about, you know, removing this type of antler quality doesn't affect your genetics or whatever. But so where I guide in South Dakota, where we're doing this giveaway, there's a lot of 4x2s, big ass freaking forks on, and just like a 180 inch deer on one side, and then he's got this giant fork on the other.
Huh.
You know, so he, score wise is maybe 160, maybe, you know, high 50s, whatever, but he looks freaking awesome because he's just a cool buck. But there's a lot of that, like a lot.
I shot three of them. Yeah, the only thing worse than a big 4x3 is a big 4x2.
Yeah.
Like, golly, give me some points, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I've killed some big 3x2s, and I like them, and I'll shoot them every time I see them. But a 4x2 would be like, that'd be crazy, man.
I you know what? I don't get caught up in score, ever.
Oh,
if I see something I like, I'm going to shoot it. Like, that's just the way I am. And I've never been an inches guy. I shouldn't say that. At one point, there was a short stint in my early TV years where I was like, especially when I was hunting whitetail, like if it wasn't a 130 inch buck, I wasn't even gonna try to shoot it.
Yeah,
I felt like I was competing with the, you know, with everybody. And I don't know why. And then I was like, why am I doing this? I don't, you know, people don't follow me because I'm a big buck guy. Like, people follow me because I teach people how to be successful in the woods.
Yeah.
You know, so I just started hunting for what made me happy. And that's how I've continued.
That shows in your social media too, because you've killed some slops, man. I mean, you've killed some nice deer, big ones, man.
And I've also killed some little guys.
And you've killed some, when I was looking, you know, I don't remember where the disconnect was last year, but I put in for the tag that you've hunted before.
Mm-hmm.
And I drew it. And I never even went because of life circumstances. So I didn't even go to Utah last year. But I have the tag in my sock drawer still.
Dang.
And I just never went. But, like, I went to YouTube. I didn't know you had that video on there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put that name in there, right?
Yeah.
That unit. I said, bow hunting in the blank, blank, blank unit, Utah.
Yep. Yep.
John Stallone. I'm like, no way.
Yeah.
Homeboy went there. And so I watched the video, and you were like, yeah, I was going to shoot a different buck. You didn't even say that in the video. I think you told me that later.
Yes, I did. I
But it was a great buck. It was a good, that's a good Utah general buck. But your smile and your true passion and the joy.
Yeah.
I love that word. You had true joy. Ah, you know, there's a bigger one, but I didn't get the bigger one.
Right.
But I got this one.
Yeah.
There's joy in that. And your joy came out. And I'm like, man, I'm going now for sure. Then I didn't even go to the hunt. Yeah. But it was joy.
I sat on that big buck for 4 hours.
Yeah.
And there was three of them together. It was a big 4x4, the 3x3 that I ended up shooting, and then a forky horn. And they were together, and they were all bedded in this thing. And I was sitting above them with my cameraman for ever and ever. And then finally they started working. And they were coming, and I could see the tips of their tines, and there was just the aspect of the hill.
It was straight down a hill. Like.
And, yeah, so much so that my cameraman, who was behind me 3 yards, couldn't see the deer.
Couldn't see the deer, no.
So I saw the tips coming, so I automatically drew back, but not because I was going to shoot the first buck. Well, he stepped out, and he must have saw me moving. Actually, I think he saw my cameraman trying to get closer because he didn't have it.
Right.
And he just, you know, he's looking, he's staring at me. And I was at full draw for like 2.5 minutes. You don't see that really in the video. But, and I was like, well, I got a bird in the hand.
Yep. You did exactly what I'd have done, man. I love my birds in my hands, man. Ooh, I got a lot of birds.
I got a bird in the hand. Hey. And I shot. And my buddy, Shane, the guy that was on him, Shane and Jake, actually, both my guides that work for me, they were across the canyon. Glassing back at me, and he's like, that other buck was literally, his nose was up that deer's ass. All he had to do is you just had to wait a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how much longer I can wait.
I'm gonna say it, and I like saying it, bow hunting is hard.
Yeah.
Bow hunting is so freaking hard that any success that you can have and any opportunity you get, man, it's just hard not to take them.
Yep.
Because you know as well as I know that there's a chance they all blew out right then and you didn't have another chance, especially if it's later in the hunt, man. It's not so much standards go down in a hunt like people talk about. It's opportunities decrease daily.
Sure.
And then when one shows up, you kind of just got to take what the mountain throws at you, man. I do. And I've always just embraced that.
Yeah.
I've always been happy with that. I learned to be happy with that. And I'm going to always be happy with that.
This last year, this past season in South Dakota, was the first time, shouldn't say, it was the second time, and it happened to me twice this year, that I wasn't happy that I shot a buck. I felt like I just shot it just to shoot it, and I was so disappointed in myself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I shot a whitetail, literally the first buck that walked out in Long Island, and I don't know why I did it. I had this, like, I'm not usually this way, like, I gotta kill something. Like, I don't know why I felt that way, but I'm like, I got to.
Yeah.
I didn't even look at it. The buck stepped out, came to the scrape that I was hunting over, and...
And where was this at?
It was in Long Island, okay?
Oh,
and then in South Dakota, man, I was chasing. If you look at that video, matter of fact, it's going to come up right now. We just pull it over. You're going to see this big 4x4, like, through a phone scope, and not right here. It's right after this. And you're going to see, like, dust flying by him.
Yeah.
This buck, you'll see the buck
right
that
there.
I'm
going to... Yeah.
Nope, not him. That's a buck from a couple of years ago in the snow, but it's coming up. Anyway, he's a cool buck. You keep watching over there. That's him.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's a beauty.
Stickers on either side like this, about this long.
Oh,
we
man.
Call them 4x4 stickers. I mean, I don't know what he would score, but again, I'm not a score guy, but I saw him. I saw him the first morning.
Yeah.
And I hunted him the whole time I was there.
Yeah.
So I got 5 days to hunt him. Before my clients got there, they both tagged out early.
Yeah.
And then I hunted it for like another 4 days.
Oh, wow.
So I had, I think it was 8 days total that I hunted. And I was in on this buck, no joke, at least 8 times I was under 50 yards. So I was frustrated as shit. Like, so bad that the buck that Charles shot, I stalked him also. We called him too tall. He was just super narrow, but like straight up. You know, so it was on a high, again, not a high scoring buck, but super cool looking.
Yeah.
It's like you wanted to
have
this buck. and Charles shot him. And I was, for the first time, I wasn't happy for him.
Yeah.
I was upset that I didn't get a deer. I was like, what the, like, why am I having these feelings?
Yeah.
And it was the weirdest freaking thing. And I end up sneaking up on this buck again. And my one of my guides there that works for me, Dan, a really good friend of mine, I had him spotting for me. And I work into this area. He sends me a text. He's like, that buck is coming around. He's coming around with that doe that he's with. He's going to come out to the side. So I just kind of moved into this to this cut, and I'm looking this way. I'm looking to my left over, you know, on the strong side for archery, and I'm waiting for this doe to come out, and I could see the flat spot where they could walk across, because if not, they're going to go up the hill. So I'm like, it's got to be 50 yards, you know, so I'm ranging it. They're going to come between 40 and 50 yards through this little cut thing.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the doe comes out, and there's no buck behind it.
Hmm.
And I was like, oh, it's perfect, right where I thought it was. And there's no buck. And I'm like, look, I'm like, there's nothing. And I feel my phone vibrating in my pocket.
Yeah.
I look at it real quick, and it says, oh, buck's going the other way. So I turn around, and I come over, and I kind of peek over this berm. And there he is standing there, and he sees movement. So he kind of trots up the hill a little bit.
Yeah.
So in my head, I'm like, I don't have time to range. So I didn't range him. I said to myself, oh, he's at 60. And I drew back, I settled the pin, and I shot. And right as I shot, he like turned his head, and I shot him right in the fucking antler. Excuse my French. Iron Will single bevel stuck right in his freaking his horn.
Dang.
Okay. So he was at 45 yards. He wasn't at 60. Because I ranged after the fact.
Yeah.
Runs off.
How far was he actually?
45.
And you shot him for 60?
Yeah. I don't know why my brain.
That's hard. It's
well,
hard
South Dakota will F with you because it's all.
Anywhere.
It's all, you know, grassland.
It's tough, man. Yeah.
It's like antelope, you know, antelope stuff. Anyway, but yeah, I shot him in the antler. Next day, he broke it off. Stalked him again.
He broke the arrow off or the antler off?
Broke the antler off.
Oh, man.
But I wanted to kill him anyway.
Yeah,
I
sure.
I had a vendetta.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah. You already ear-notched him, man. You had to go get
him. I got on him two more times, and I didn't kill him. Screw it. So the last day, I said, I'm going to go sit in this blind that we have.
Yeah.
I'm not going to spot and stalk. I'm going to go sit in this blind that we have in the morning, and then I'll spot and stalk for the afternoon. And a buck steps out 20 yards, and I just went into kill mode, drew back, shot it, and then afterwards I had regrets that I did. And
yeah,
I was like,
was it the one you really wanted?
No.
Yeah.
No. No. So like it's happened to me maybe 3 times in my whole life, but most of the time I want you to be happy. I tell people sometimes, if you're not gonna be happy shooting something, don't shoot it.
Yep. Yeah.
Like
it's funny you're saying that right now because I just did a podcast with Dustin Whitwer.
Uh-huh.
And I said those very words at the end of that podcast. I think I said I'll never shoot a deer that I'm sorry I did if I walked
right
up on it, and I don't ever want that feeling ever and ever. Yeah. So, and I wasn't like that when I was young.
Yeah.
No.
Well, because like, everything made you happy, right?
That's right. Everything made you happy. So, odd couple. Like this guy is always. I've never seen him. I've never seen you be that way.
No. I've always been happy. Whatever I shot, I just like. I'm glad I got it. Man.
Right. 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 And so. And that's why I've developed into, I guess you can call me a trophy hunter. I'm still the meat's primary.
Right.
We either use it or we give it to somebody that really needs it, right?
It's all,
that's number one. I just want to say that.
Yeah.
But secondarily, I'm okay if I don't fill a tag at all now. Yeah. I don't know if that's an age thing. Like, I'll ask you that question, John. Like, how do you
I
think you...
I have to fill a tag. I am...
Do you think you'll be that way...
I don't know.
...till the end?
I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. I'll go until, I mean, I'm not going to shoot something just to fill a tag, but I will not be happy with myself if I don't fill a tag.
If you don't.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's
got to see that very completion.
I got to see the completion. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to see the completion. And
but I totally get.
And I think a reason for that, too, is for a long time, I used to keep stats, and I haven't. And maybe I should again, because I think it also helped me to look back things. But I used to keep stats, and I was like, 85%, I filled 85% of my tags, and this is getting 7 to 8 tags a year for I think I did a 14-year stint where 85% of my tags I filled. So, like, it's something I measured myself by. You know, we all have these things, these, like, whatever. Yeah. But maybe it's a, you know, a personality flaw or whatever. But I just feel like, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to say I'm not good enough or whatever the case may be. But I feel like I'm not who I am if I'm not
doing what I'm doing. I don't feel like there's such thing as a personality flaw. I think it's just personality.
Okay, that's
personality.
Good.
Yeah. You know,
I'm okay with that because I used to think it was age.
Yeah.
You know, I've shot this many deer. You know, I've graduated from, I got to just get one. Now I'll accept myself because I was able to accomplish that. Now I want to get a bunch of them. I want to have four tags in four states, and I want to fill all those.
Right.
And then now I've done that, so now I want the biggest one.
Yeah.
And then once I get the biggest one, I might want another biggest one.
Right.
But then you get to a point where you're just like, I don't care if I shoot them at all, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's personalities that'll never be that.
Yeah.
Because I know older guys than me that'll never be that.
Yeah.
They're going to fill tags till the day they die, and I think that's okay. I personally don't want to walk up on something ever and wish I hadn't shot it.
Right.
That's where I
stand.
And that's why I love him.
A very real thing. Like,
it is.
So this year is where my personality clashed. You know, it went against itself. Like, I wanted to fill the tag so that I could prove to myself that I could still fill a tag, that I wasn't washed up. I don't know what the fuck I was thinking, but all these stupid thoughts go through your head. And, you know, instead of me looking at, John, you literally created 10 different stocks on your target buck. It took me, actually, I did a podcast with Dan, the guy that hunts with my friend over there. And he's the one who pointed it out to me. He's like, man, you're looking at it wrong. He's like, how many people wish they could have did what you do and had created that many opportunities? Because, you know, hunting's all about creating opportunities. And you did that, but you just focused on the fact that you weren't getting him instead of focusing on the fact that you could have got him X amount of times. Yes, okay, you were, you know, I wasn't practiced or well enough or whatever the cases may be, or the coyote that screwed it up. I mean, you know,
yeah.
There's things that happen, and don't look at those. Look at the good things that you did. And I used to always be able to look at that. And for whatever reason this year, man, I'm just maybe a head case, and I couldn't do it. And I'm glad I was able to come back and realize these things, because now I can go back to the way I was next season.
I think what happened to you there, and I hope this doesn't offend you, but we used to call those rebound bucks.
Yeah.
And I've watched my dad do it where, hey, there's a big old buck. I watched him miss a Boone and Crockett typical buck at 38 yards with his bow and arrow.
Okay.
And then we walk off the hill, and there's this little bitty buck there, and he shot it because he's like,
because he missed.
After what happened up here, I don't know if I'm capable of doing it anymore.
Right.
And then he found out he was capable of doing it, and then he wished he hadn't done it.
Right. Exactly.
And so we used to call that rebound bucks, and within our own family group, we would make fun of that or make light of that. Right. Yeah. This guy's never shot a rebound buck. He's only shot bucks.
Yeah, because he's not happy. You're not unhappy with what you're just saying.
And you know, in this topic, it's a perspective. So two completely different perspectives here. I would be a much different person if I lived where he lives. Mm-hmm. Jeremy lives in the Mecca of giant mule deer country. He gets super connected to the land and particular bucks in this piece. He's not going to the Wasatch, somewhere he's never been before.
Right.
So I go find glory and drop me off in Cottonwood Canyon. Drop me off in Cottonwood Canyon. I'm going to put my pack on with my food. Yep. Pick me up here in a week. Okay. When you pick me up, I'm going to have a dead buck.
There you go.
And that's what happened. I hiked up a place I've never been before. Go up there and shoot a big old freaking 4x3. I hike it back down. Corey Beckendorf comes with be there Thursday at 2.
Yep.
I'm sitting down there, man. I'm like, bring me a pizza and some Pepsi, man. I got a buck. And we go up there and we pack it off. Yeah. That, to me, is what I'm after. That experience, right? Jeremy lives in Mecca, Boonerville.
Yep.
I mean, in the spot. So he goes out. It's a 365-day ordeal for him. I'm 7 days in mule deer country. If this Utah's where I'm coming, it's 7 days on the Wasatch or wherever, right? Jeremy lives there. And now I'm watching him. I'm watching as a spectator in his life. It's not even about – there's two different things going on. It's not even about a dead deer.
Right.
It's about I'm going to go pound I'm going to look for sheds. I'm going to pound every inch of this to find what lives there. When he finds it, I'm going to go track that thing three times in a row.
Yep.
Because I'm the tags are almost impossible to get in this country.
Yep.
So he's going to know everything about that. He's going to jump that deer. He's going to track it out, jump it, watch where it goes. He's going to go shed hunt, do all this. I'm going to go see if old freaking one-eye Willie's back over there.
Yeah.
Yep. Jumped him again. Watch him go through that saddle again. Boom. Next time we get a tag, we're going to kill one-eye Willie in that gap. Yeah. That is the joy for him.
What, right.
My coming off the mountain with a buck on my backpack yep. is my 100% joy. Him pulling a trigger has nothing to do with the fact that one-eye Willie got killed in that gap because he built that in his mind and saw it. So I've watched him watch me, mm-hmm. his daughter, his buddies. That is the purest pure joy for Jeremy Duggars to go find one-eyed Willie in so-and-so canyon and have his plan come together and that deer die, right?
You know,
that is what you're exactly that's your experience you're after. And yep. it is going to be the biggest deer in the basin.
Right.
And that's what he's after. And now, so where I go pig hunting and I go whitetail hunting and I go do all of these things, mm-hmm. this man's either putting 25-inch freaking rainbows in his boat fishing or he's looking for the biggest mule deer in the country. But he also is like the coyote slaying machine. Of his goal this year, we're hunting, and he's like, man, I want to do more for mule deer. I don't even want to kill one. I want to do more for him. What can I do more for? I was like, well, join the Mule Deer Foundation. Join Hal. Go get a shovel and some gloves. Do all this stuff.
Checked all those boxes.
He goes, I want to do more. You know what I want to do? I want to kill coyotes. He goes, I have a goal. I'm going to kill 100 coyotes this year.
Yeah.
This is like 6 weeks ago, and now he's killed 15, and before then he hadn't killed one in like years, right?
Didn't ever hunt them.
And now he's like figuring out how to call them.
Yeah.
So he's going in his land where he likes to hunt, mm-hmm. and he's literally making a difference where he hunts by smoking every stinking coyote he sees, and he's good at it. So, you know, it's just a cool story, man.
Nice.
He's a cool guy, and he has his way, what he wants to do. But take me to the trailhead, drop me off. And I want to kill a buck I've never even dreamed of.
Right.
I've never saw him. I don't know nothing. I just walked up there, used my hunting skills, found a nice deer, mature, 3 years old or better, and 4x3, 4x2, 4x4, whatever. I'm going to send an arrow through him.
Yep.
I'm going to put that velvety rack on my pack. I'm going to get beat down and bloody. I'm going to come off that, and I'm going to have the same exact feeling when I get in my truck as when he gets in the truck when his daughter squeezes off on one-eye Willie.
Right.
It's the same thing, exact result. Totally different perspectives, right?
And what's cool about our friendship is all that collides when we're together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We really are living, hunting differently.
Yeah.
We are. Like, it's almost 180 degrees.
Yeah.
And some people would look at that and be like, how are you guys even friends? Like, you're not even on the same trajectory.
Yeah.
But when
sometimes that works.
When that trajectory crosses right here, that's when magic happens.
Yeah.
That's what works, right?
It's really cool.
Yeah.
Because you guys are probably more alike than we're alike as far as hunting technique styles and what you want out of
it.
Like by a long shot.
Yeah.
But when we come together, there's just something about it.
We both get to really watch each other fulfill what we're after. Like I've watched, you invite me to come watch you hunt particular bucks, and when you get them, I'm there to share that with you. My experience, the buck I killed in Colorado this year, first nice, really 24-inch four-point came by. We had not been hunting there 4 or 5 days, hadn't seen anything good.
Right.
I was like, hey, man, and I have a tone where I'm like, hey, I'm going to smoke this buck right quick.
Yeah.
If I say it that fast, I get on my shooting sticks, just hold your ears. There's no talking me off the bench. I'm shooting, right? And he's like, okay, man, I'm trying to get him on camera and all this stuff. And I shot him, and it was not the buck I went there to shoot, but it was the nicest one I saw.
Right.
But there was no regret.
Yeah.
I was like, man, the one thing I said, I looked at, dude, this has been the buck I was after like 3 years from now. And he goes, he didn't even say nothing. He's like, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
You know, he knows that's okay. So, what are we going to do? Well, we're going to skin this 4-point and get out of here, right?
Right.
We were happy with it.
Yep.
Hey, if we're going to tell a story, do we have time to tell a story?
Yeah, absolutely.
If we're going to tell a story, you need to tell the story about Shining Beams.
Shining Beams?
I don't think that's ever hit a podcast. And I think that connects everything we're talking about.
Oh, yeah, Shining Beams. So you have ground shrinkage. Mm-hmm. Shoot a deer that you think you shot.
Right.
You walk up, oh, he's smaller, right?
Yep.
In 2005, I drew, at that time, what was considered the best deer tag in New Mexico.
Okay.
I drew it. And I was already living in Colorado, but it was back in New Mexico where I met Jeremy.
Right.
And so I go back, and I'm like, I'd killed enough. Like, the year prior, I just killed my biggest bow buck, a 186 bow buck.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, okay, I want to get and that's my first rifle tag I'd ever drawn. It was only my second rifle tag ever.
Okay.
for mule deer, but it was the first one I ever drew, right? Because I went on over the counter back when you could still do that. And so I kept asking these, like, I was like, I'm just going to tell a story. I guess I'm going to get to what you're wanting me to get to eventually,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, hey, man, I don't know all the country like they know it, but I know the names of some of the places I like. You know, I'm like, mm-hmm. hey, man, can we go to Forked Horn Ridge? And he's like, yeah, man, we're going to Forked Horn Ridge, man. And so Larry later is like, hey, we should go do a drive on Forked Horn Ridge.
Yep.
It's like two people have said that, right? And Jeremy goes, man, I can orchestrate a freaking deer drive on. He's like, he's the mastermind, right? He goes, let me put this together in my head real quick. So, okay, we're going to go to Forked Horn Ridge. So we go to this other spot first. And this is weird, man. Watch this big 3-point buck walk out and rub a telephone pole.
Oh, wow.
Mule deer buck.
Cool. Yeah,
he freaking rubbed a telephone pole in a crispy, cold morning. The only reason I remember it is because we videoed it, right?
I got it on video.
I was like, I don't remember it, but I remember it because I watched the video later, right?
Right.
So we watch this buck rub this telephone pole, and then he's like, all right, man, I think the time's right. Let's go over and do. And then we watch a dude smoke down a 180-inch buck off of a well location through glass from where we're at. Right?
Oh, wow.
We see these trucks going on a well location. We're glassing it. Boom, they shoot. Well, they pull out on the main road. We pull out right behind them, and then we're having to watch it, right?
Yeah.
In the back of the truck is this 180-inch buck, and I'm like, man, when's it my turn? When's it my turn? Duggar's like, man, your turn's coming. So we go up on this bench. Me and Jeremy are up on this point, and our friend Jimmy Hambrick and his brother Larry, they're going to push this thing, this huge ravine. They come over this knob
yep.
into this canyon, and he had filmed a giant dagger 3-point there years before, and he called that buck Satan because he would tempt you, right?
Right.
And so I called that Satan's Hole. So there was an article in Eastman's called Satan's Hole. It's in the David Long book.
Okay.
This is the story of that buck.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And then so that's the Satan Hole buck. But who wants to give glory to Satan? So I wrote another article called Shining Beams because that's what I saw when I shot him, and that's what went muley crazy. I wrote the same story twice, put it in muley crazy. I put it in. So Ryan calls me Shining Beams. Every time he sees me, Ryan Hatch. Hey, Shining Beams, what's up? That's what he remembers me by, right? So all I remember is we're up there, and the two dudes come over the hill, and there's deer, 150 deer blow out of here. They're going left and right. You know, this is New Mexico.
Right.
All the deer have migrated in. And we're sitting there kind of goofing off and talking. We're thinking the drive's over. We saw this one nice 3-point go out of the bottom. And, I mean, total dicking off. Like, if you're on a deer drive, the hunt's not over till you're standing right there.
Right.
I mean, that's literally a buck could get up between us standing here 3 feet away. Don't. It's not over till it's over.
Right.
Well, me and him, and we know that. And he knows it better than I know it. But we're sitting up on this hill talking about going to get lunch or whatever. And all of a sudden, we hear this loud popping noise. And I'm thinking it's rocks rolling, right? So I'm looking down there. But it's Larry. They jumped this freaking Booner buck. Larry jumped him. And Larry walked up on him. The deer tried to J-hook and go back over the top. Well, he ran into Larry, or into Jimmy. Then he couldn't go over the top. He had to. He didn't want to go across that bottom, but he freaking broke loose and came running across. And so Larry's clapping his hands, trying to get our attention. Because he could see us. He's like, you goofballs up there goofing off. And I got this Boone and Crockett buck running over the top of me. And so he starts clapping his hands to get our attention. So then Jeremy's like, we both see it. This deer, dude, he is stretching like a racehorse. I can see it in my mind right now, like wide open, flat, going over sagebrush, right? I'm packing his custom 257 Weatherby. I had a new muzzleloader I was going to hunt with or some dumb thing like that on a rifle hunt.
Yeah, yeah.
After day one, I'm like, just give me your freaking gun, man.
Yeah, yeah,
so I took his rifle. And so the deer, we see it, and I'm like, hey, I'm shooting that buck. And Duggar's got a video camera, a big XL1 cannon behind me trying to film me.
Yeah.
And I run down the spine of this bench, and I'm watching the deer. And so I can see the deer below me in this rim rock, and he's coming through the cedars. And I'm like, as soon as he gets to it, when he stops, if I get him to stop, I'm going to shoot. And I knew it was far. I didn't know how far. The deer zigzag, and he stops for a brief second to decide which way to go. I threw his rifle up offhand, put it on, you know, come down on the shoulder and touch off the shot. Boom, deer dropped in his tracks.
Nice.
300 yards.
Oh, wow.
Shot him offhand, hit him in the neck, dropped him dead. And I go, I was like, man, that's like a 28-inch wide 3-point, man. It's a huge, huge 3-point, like whitetails, like 3-point.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, man, that's a big buck. I don't know what it is. And we're sitting there glassing it, and Jimmy walks up, and he goes, dude, that thing's racks up to Jimmy's thigh. Dude. That's a 4-point. Wait. Dude, you shot a 4-point. It's a big 4-point. It sounds just like that, right? I'm thinking I just shot a big 3-point. I go, that's a 192-inch 4-point, man.
Jeez.
And that was my biggest buck to date at the time. Mm-hmm. But that was ground growage, not ground shrinkage, right?
That's awesome.
That buck walked in front of my brother. My brother's looking at me and Mark. This is from his explanation of what happened. He's looking at me and Mark on the rim over across the canyon. and he watches this 192-inch buck walk in his view at 15 yards.
Oh, right.
And he goes like this and just starts clapping his hand.
Yeah.
To get our attention.
Yeah.
And that buck takes off across, and Mark ended up shooting him. But one of the reasons I wanted you to tell that story is because I can remember vividly in the truck, mm-hmm. just being a whiny bee that day, me. Yeah. Because I was explaining how here I am, 30 years old, I haven't gone to college,
uh-huh.
I don't have a good job, right? I've wasted all of my 20s. All my 20s are just wasted because all I do is fly fish, chase mule deer, and shed hunt, and that's it, right?
Right.
I work in a podunk archery shop, right? But, however, I think I know how to kill this buck, man. There's a little knob right here. Right? So after it all went down, someone said, oh, so you wasted, they're looking at a dead 192-inch buck, and they look at me and they go, oh, so you wasted your 20s, huh? Because they're all thanking me for spending all this time to know the country and well enough
right.
to get this buck on the ground, right?
Right.
And so here's a little life lesson that I think is really cool. Well, and so when we collided in that intersection, right, he's got the shooting ability, he's got the ice, got all the ability to get that deer on the ground. I had all the ability to make all that happen.
Right.
But I'm worried about wasting my 20s. But here's what I do for a living now. I own an archery shop. I uh-huh. own it now, right?
Yeah.
I guide on the river. I'm a fly fishing guide, right?
Yeah.
And I buy sheds and sell sheds.
There you go.
and that day I complained about all that. That's what I do to make money now, right? So in hindsight, retroactively, that's what makes all that so cool. But also the collision of how all that went down at that moment
yeah.
was everything that's good about you in hunting and everything that's good about me in hunting
yeah.
on that intersection.
That's awesome.
That's why I wanted him to tell that story.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's pretty
that's
cool.
That's why you guys are a great team right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, you guys fill each other's voids, I guess. It's kind of gross sounding.
And how hard is that to do? I mean, how many other hunting partners
yeah.
like that? Can,
I have that for can, sure.
Do you? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good, man.
I kind of had that with Charles too. So he's very slow and methodical, and I'm very go, go, go. And we kind of even each other out a yeah. lot.
There you go.
That's like a, without getting into details, but that's kind of
yeah.
why we work well together. So,
yeah.
All right, guys. Well, I appreciate you coming on.
Hey, man. Thanks for having us over
in
here,
the booth
man.
Here.
Yeah, thanks yeah. so much,
thanks
John.
For having
thanks
us
for getting involved in that hunt. Hopefully, one of you guys will win that.
Hey, if
well, because we've never hunted together.
If he wins, can I come?
We're all
just yeah. can I come along?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and if you win, I'll come.
We'll
just
yeah.
make that happen.
Yeah.
yeah, we'll come, man.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, yeah. John. Thanks all for having us, man.
Thanks,
thank
John.
You. Hey, guys. Thanks for checking out the show. Really appreciate you. Keep those reviews and those comments coming. Helps us keep this free. Do me a favor, go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. Use promo code John Stallone to save 20%, all one word. And check out Howl for Wildlife. Thank you very much, and we'll catch you on the next show.